everyone. Thanks for joining the podcast. A podcast that is not a marketing podcast, but nonetheless, a podcast for marketers. We are speaking to Bill Flynn about leadership today, about what it takes to lead people and your business or your team successfully. We speak about what makes good leaders, about the errors managers make, and how to better position yourself to help your team grow and succeed under your management as opposed to get stuck or take the wrong direction. We also touch a bit on the psychology behind people's decisions and the irrational drives that guide them. And I highly recommend Bill's book, Further Faster, for anyone who's running a small or a large business. It will save you a lot of time and stress and help you zero in on the exact parts of the organization you need to focus on if you want to grow further faster. Bill has been coaching business leaders for decades. He's helped a number of organizations get past obstacles to their growth and help them reach their goals, whether it's revenue goals or acquisition goals. You'll know many of these companies. Anyway, it was a really interesting conversation for me. I hope it is for you too. Okay, our guest, Bill Flynn. So, Bill, thanks so much for getting on the call and helping us become better leaders, better managers, and better business owners. Really appreciate your time. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for asking me to be part of your program. I really appreciate it.
So, I want to start here. So, you know, leadership, when we speak about leadership, you know, we often hear that people have a kind of a natural talent for leadership, as if it's something you're born with. And I don't know, to what degree is leadership really something that can be taught versus something that's inherent? Can anyone really be taught to be a leader and good at leading teams? Or is it just a matter of kind of reading and acquiring knowledge? What do you think about that?
Yeah. So first, I think, so that's a great question. And what I like to make sure is we all understand the meaning behind the word. So some people say leadership and they mean one thing. Some people mean something else. You know, there's all sorts of things associated with leadership, you know, being in charge, having authority, having a title, et cetera. I'll give you my definition of leadership. So at least you can tell and your listeners can tell where I'm coming from. So to me, leadership is super simple. Leadership is the creation of followers, full stop. You can't be a leader. You can't call yourself a leader. You are called that by your followers. People have decided that for some reason that wherever you're going, they want to join you and help you. So that is, I don't think that's a natural born anything. I do think we confuse certain things with leadership. Just because you step out in front and take charge doesn't mean that you're a leader. It means that you take charge. But if no one follows you, then I wouldn't call you a leader. So that's absolutely a skill that can be taught around leaders. I've read a lot about leadership, and I'll tell you, I actually don't think leadership is a thing. There's no real way to say, here are the steps that you must take to be a leader. And here are the examples of those leaders, because great leaders are all in different shapes and sizes and abilities and whatever. You know, they're all kind of different. You know, Gates is different than Musk is different. Mullally is different than, you know, Buffett. You know, name your leaders of, you know, at least this generation or that we know. They're all kind of different. What I would say, if you want to be a leader, is you want to believe in something and have a vision for it. It needs to be compelling for people to follow you. So that's the first prerequisite, I think, of being a leader, is think about stuff that you want to make better or that you really think could drives you, that you have sort of this passion for, and then create a vision around it. If we were able to make this whatever, this is what would happen. Here's what I would envision. I think a vision, at least here in the US, the vision we have is a more perfect union. That's really the essence of the vision here in the United States, right? We're trying to be a more perfect union. At least that's 200, 300 years ago. I don't know that we'll ever get there, right? We'll never get perfect, but the vision is to always be there. And we've described that in certain ways, right? The inalienable rights and all these things, free speech and et cetera. We've said, here's what it looks like when we get there, and we're always striving towards it. So creating that compelling vision is really important. The only other thing that I've seen that really is across all leaders, and we can argue whether it's a good leader or a bad leader, because I think leadership is subjective again, mm-hmm. is that they have courage. To share your vision takes courage, to defend your vision, because there are going to be people who say that you're crazy, that's not going to work. Right. You know, Elon Musk, people told him, no way are you going to be able to build a rocket cheaply enough and then have it take off, come back and land. Everyone told him it was impossible. And he said, no, it's doable. The physics say it's doable. It's super hard. And he said, yeah, I'm going to do that. And the reason he's doing that, because he wants to, you know, colonize Mars, which is his real ultimate vision. But in order to colonize Mars, we have to be able to go there and come back and in the same rocket, because we don't have the parts to build a rocket there. So we have to bring it with us and bring it back. Mm-hmm. That's a compelling vision. And lots of people have said, I want to help you do that. And so have the courage to do that. And I think, you know, Elon Musk is a great example of someone who has courage. But there are plenty who would argue that he's not a great leader. People think he's kind of a jerk. People think he's condescending. And, you know, and so we have all these traits that we think leaders have. But I would say it's just not true. We will forgive them of many, many things because we are so compelled by where they want to go, what they want to mm-hmm. do, what they want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. So that's, I absolutely think it's a teachable thing for anyone mm-hmm. to become a leader.
Yeah. I think you mentioned in your book, Further Faster, that the vision actually has to be kind of crazy. Like it shouldn't be easy to achieve. And of course, if it's easy to achieve, then it doesn't really require that much courage, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you can have a simple vision. I mean, you can have a vision of a family. You can have a vision of a room. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter what it is, but if you want to attract followers, generally they have to be compelled, right? Following is an act, is a volunteering act. Mm-hmm. You can't declare that I'm the leader. You can, yeah. But if nobody follows you, are you really a leader? So that's what I sort of think.
Lead
to that.
So yeah, you mentioned that leaders, sometimes they have plenty of weaknesses in other areas. And that's something I want to kind of touch on is this maybe some of the blind spots that people have. And, you know, leaders are people, exactly. And everyone has blind spots and weaknesses that get in the way of their kind of progress and growth. So if you find yourself in a position of leadership, how can you ensure that your weaknesses or your blind spots aren't doing damage to the rest of the organization?
Well, so if you have a blind spot, then it will absolutely do damage if it's a bad one, right? Because you don't even know you have it. So of course it's going to do damage.
right.
But if you're self-aware and humble, you'll realize there's no way you can know everything, do everything. You're going to need help. I mean, your main job is to sort of create this vision and then to create the atmosphere that allow people to help you be their best selves to get you there. Mm-hmm. I think a story I heard a while ago is Howard Schultz, who started Starbucks. And he's a hard driver, you know, and he says that. Like he says, look, I have a lot of energy. I push people. I can probably piss them off, et cetera. And he said, if I'm in charge of all these people, that could be a problem. So he hired someone between him and basically everyone else, mm-hmm. because that person had the skills and the abilities and the traits that could, you know, as Alan Mulally, one of my favorite leaders says, is you want to love your people up, but hold them to the standard, mm-hmm. right? And if you can do those things, then they'll feel safe. They'll feel like they can help you. They'll feel like they can throw out crazy ideas, you know, that sort of psychologically safe thing from Amy Edmondson. If you can create that atmosphere, then they will help you realize your vision. And your job from that point is to just remind people of who we are, what we care about, all those kind of things. I say, you know, CEO eventually goes from chief executive officer to chief explanation officer. And you're just mm-hmm. constantly saying the same thing over and over again. And spending more time thinking about the future of the business as opposed to running the day-to-day. That's one of my big things is if you want to be a true leader and really head a company or head a group, you have to think of ways to fire yourself from the day-to-day So you can spend more time thinking about the future, which is leading people somewhere else.
So when do actually people turn to you? When do they come to you? When do they recognize that they really need advice?
Usually when there's a problem.
Right.
So either they're stuck. Many of my clients have for years have been stuck in one place. You know, they bounce between, you know, a few million dollars here and there, up and down, you know, let's say from 10 to 15, they never seem to break through 15 and they can't figure out why. Mm-hmm. They've tried all sorts of stuff. And so that's one of the reasons. The other is that they're sort of near the beginning and they have seen that getting to where they want to be, they don't know how to do it. And mm-hmm. they're looking for help from others. So I might be one of those people that they look to. And that's sort of more of an unleashing of growth as opposed to an unsticking of growth. All the people that come to me want to grow in some way, shape, or form, either in terms of dollars and or other ways, right? Grow in terms of learning experience, mm-hmm. et cetera. So they want to learn. My best clients are generally humble learners who are comfortable challenging the status quo on a regular basis. If you don't have those three traits, I can't really help you, because my job is to have you stop running things and start thinking about the future, which takes humility and it takes trust, right? You have to sort of trust the team that they're going to run the day-to-day business on your behalf. And if you can't do that and you're happy with the way things are, then I or people like me really can't help you that much. We can try, but it's really difficult. And so I actually pick all my clients. I don't, if someone offers me money, I don't take it offhand. I work them through a process first so I can at least see, do they have those traits? I'm not always right. I've definitely fired a few clients, but that's my goal.
I'm actually really curious about this point. So when you start, looking at a business, speaking to leaders, where do you often see this kind of areas of resistance, you know, and people maybe not wanting to change how they operate or how their business operates? Where are they usually?
Well, at least in the US, and I can't speak for other countries, but we've been taught from an early age that having the answer means that you're at the top.
Uh-huh.
You know, I learned that. I mean, I'm 56 years old and, I was a horrible student. I'm a great learner. I love to learn, but I was a really horrible student. I mean, if you look at my IQ, I should have been a straight A student everywhere I went. And I wasn't, because it didn't make sense to me sort of what was going on. And really from early, I didn't realize until looking back. And I'm more interested in the question than the answer. And I think unfortunately, we're taught that, right? So you got to where you were because you had the answers. And then, especially now, and it's becoming more increasingly faster, there's so much data and information. There's no way you're going to have all the answers. There's no way you're going to have all the access to all the information. You have to rely on other people. So that's sort of what I've noticed as the biggest barrier. And it's probably... some people call it vulnerability. Some people call it humility. Mm-hmm. Sort of, it's this understanding that I equate to a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset. If you have a growth mindset and you cultivate your growth mindset, you're much more likely to be a better leader, because you realize in the power of the word yet. I don't know that yet. I can't do that yet. And if you believe that in yourself and you see that in yourself and you learn new skills, et cetera, then you're much more likely to see it in other people. And you'll see that your job is to help them get to the yet. Your job is to understand what they do really well, what their strengths are, because often those of us who have certain strengths don't know that they're strengths, because to them, it's just normal.
Mm-hmm.
Right. My daughter is a synesthete, which is the wiring of her brain is a little different than most other people, which means that some of her senses have crossed over. And many musicians and artists have synesthesia of some shape or form. So my daughter can do what's called spontaneous harmonization when she sings, which means she can just songs she's never heard before, and she can hear the other notes in her head and she can sing them.
Incredible.
Which most people can't do off the top of their head. They have to practice and learn it, et cetera. And so she doesn't see that that is amazing. Because to her, it's just, well, that's what I do. It just shows up in my brain and it comes out this way. So as a leader, you got to be really good at noticing that in other people and saying, and stopping them and say, what did you do there? That was amazing. You know, and help them understand how that, what those pieces are, and then figure out how to get them to do those types of things more often. Because the stuff that we do that we're really good at, we generally do it and time flies. You know, there's a thing called flow. So that's, I think, where the resistance is they have more of a fixed mindset. They think that people are who they are. They don't change. They can't get better. They got to have all the answers. That's the biggest thing that I run up against when, the resistance, as you said, that I see from folks is they ask me, you know, what's one of my biggest things that I have to help leaders get over? And I say, and these are the leaders who are hiring me. I say, I need you to shut up. Your job is not to give the answer. Your job is to talk last, if at all. And if you talk, the first thing that should come out of your mouth is praise for whatever was just said in a sincere way. Then the next thing should be clarification. What did you mean by that? Here's what I heard. Is that correct? Before you go and say, here's my input to the thing. We go to the last thing first. And often we do it first. And that changes the entire tenor of the conversation, because there's something in neuroscience called anchoring. And if you anchor someone, no matter what your status is, that's a problem. But if you're also in charge, it's even worse, because guess what everyone says? They say, oh, we have this big problem. Right. The CEO walks in a room and say, we have this big problem. We're doing this wrong, et cetera, et cetera. Here's what I think we should do. What do you guys think? Guess what happens?
Yeah.
That's the only idea.
Yeah, I see your point clearly there. And I'm really curious to also understand how this changes in a fully remote environment. So we're all working remotely now. And what recommendations do you actually have for leaders who need to lead teams and inspire people in such an environment? And also, what should they really be kind of looking out for, maybe where they need to step in?
Yeah, so I don't think the principles of being a good leader and helping, you know, leading teams well, they don't change much in terms of whether you're remote or whether you're together. There are two things going on right now, which is people are remote more often, but there's also this sort of specter that is hanging over all of us, right? So people are feeling less safe. So what I would say for now, I would do those two things. One is people just want attention. That's what we all crave. And when it's sincere and deep, then we feel like we're part of something and we feel like someone cares about us. Whether we're, 5 years old or 10 years old or 50 years old, we still love attention. So that's something that really good leaders understand, is that they realize that their job is to pay attention to each individual. It's easier when you're in one place, because you can sort of, you can have collisions, as Tony Hsieh or Steve Jobs talks about, right? Is you can have these collisions where you're meeting in the bathroom or whatever. So you have to be more deliberate, I think, about the attention in a remote environment where you're creating the place for collisions. One of the things that I recommend to folks is, if everyone's working from home or hybrid, et cetera, pick an hour or two or three a day that you just all get on Zoom, but you don't actually have a meeting. You just leave it open. And then, if you're working away on something, then you can just sort of say, hey, are you listening? Are you there? I got a question. That's something you can do to help create deliberate stuff. You can also set up meetings, making sure that you're meeting more often, maybe not very long, but just start checking in, seeing how people are. Doing a lot of status, we got this project. It's 3 weeks long. We're going to meet once a week for an hour to talk about this stuff. And we're going to meet every day for a few minutes and just give a quick, daily huddle kind of thing. That'll help. But also the other thing you have to do now, which hopefully you won't have to do soon, is check people's level of safety, right? There's the Neuroleadership Institute, which I follow. and David Rock, who runs it, talks about, you know, people are in generally three levels of safety. One is sort of generally safe. We know that, you know, nothing's for sure. There's always risk in living and et cetera, but we can sort of deal with that because it's an everyday thing. And then there's the thing in sort of our neighborhood. There's something going on. We feel a little less safe. It's closer to us, but it's not quite here. And then, of course, it's something that's right at your doorstep. You don't know where people are in your team. Everyone's mm-hmm. experiencing this pandemic and all of this, the situation that goes along with it, differently. So you're going to have to make sure you understand where everyone's at, because people will react differently to the same situation based upon where they're coming from. So I'd say make sure you do the deliberate attention with remote, but you should do attention anyway. And then, of course, in the pandemic, you also have to make sure you understand this level of safety, right? Are they green, yellow, or red in terms of safety? You know, and green is, you know, it's pretty much, you know, when the vaccine comes and everyone's out doing stuff the way they were before, you know, in 2019, then they're in green. If they're in yellow or red, then they're different levels. And when your brain is under threat, you act differently. You're less healthy. Mm-hmm. You don't sleep as well. I mean, there's all these things that go along with it. You have to be more attuned to that, I think, now. You should be attuned to that anyway, but even more so now with what's going on with the pandemic.
Yeah, and I personally noticed that also, aside from the safety factor, and I think that is a really top of mind for everyone, and sort of financial uncertainty too. There's really this humanity has been sort of a little bit taken away out of our work, where we don't have these casual interactions at work. Work can become very sort of just work related. You know, you jump into calls and it's just kind of agenda items that you cross off the list, and then you off to the next call. And so it feels like we're missing a bit of this humanity and a bit of kind of the connection between people, where maybe it creates that sense of safety a little bit sometimes.
Yeah, that definitely can help. I think the thing that I always advise in terms of helping people is to give them something that they control that means something. Mm-hmm. With the pandemic, there's lost so many things out of control. As you said, financial, health, you know, humanity, connection, you know, I can't see my family members, et cetera. So as a leader, what you can do is give them something they can control that actually means something, right, to them and to the organization, and help them to achieve that. That gives them something that they can deal with and gives them some sense of autonomy and certainty, because they're part of it and they're making it happen. Mm-hmm. Doesn't solve it all, but at least it takes a little bit of the deepness of all those things that you mentioned the difficulty that those create away from them, right? You can at least mitigate it a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Bill, you've been in this for a while, and I'm just kind of curious also to look a little bit back, maybe not a couple of years, but a couple of decades. Like, if you look at the way that we look at leadership, and if we kind of look, let's say, 20, 30 years back, you know, has it changed to what we think of leadership in the modern context? And do you see it changing further, if it is actually something that evolves?
I don't think leadership has changed that much. I've been studying leadership for a long time. And so basically, the birth of management science is really when the sort of leadership thing came about, because before then it was command and control, right? It was the Industrial Revolution, right? All that kind of stuff. It was leadership was one guy's in charge. Everyone helps out. And you just do what he or she says. And mostly it was a he. But then, when the Industrial Revolution in the early 1900s started to change, we had this thing called management science, right? And we've got people like Drucking, Deming, Schein, McGregor, all these sort of management thinkers from the first half of the 20th century. And then now you've got Collins and Porter and all these guys. And if you look at what they all say, they're not saying anything different, mm-hmm. From each other. Maybe their take on it, but the general underpinnings of what they're saying is basically the same. At least that's what I see. So mm-hmm. I think the future of leadership is already here. It's just unevenly distributed. The best leader I have ever come across in all of my years of study, so decades of study, he's still alive. His name is Alan Mulally. And I was a speaker in Vistage for many, many years. So I've been in front of hundreds and hundreds of CEOs, and I would talk about Alan Mulally, and then when I would mention his name, I would ask people, and these are people who are generally more enlightened than most, right? They're humble. They're trying to get together with their peers and get better and run their business in a better way. And they're generally running organizations that are millions, if not tens or hundreds of millions in size. So these are some pretty hefty people who've been around. And I asked them how many people know who Alan Mulally is. And most people did not know who he was. But if you ask them who Steve Jobs was or Elon Musk or, you know, Sam Walton, they all know those names. And I think he's the best leader we've ever had. And then I explained to them why I think that is. And I said, so here is a man who worked at Boeing and took over Boeing commercial aircraft in the 90s was in charge during 9/11. And they came out of 9/11 better than they went in under his leadership. And then Bill Ford asked him in 2006 to do the same thing at Ford. And he did it again through 2008. I don't know any leader that has done that twice in such a huge way. I saw him speak once many years ago. And what I loved about him, he's a super humble guy. And he spoke for an hour and a half. He had one slide. And he sort of had this, he's from Kansas. He had this sort of Midwestern, aw shucks kind of thing. He just looked at the slide and said, this is all I know. These 10 things on this slide. And I did these 10 things at Boeing and I did these 10 things at Ford. And it worked both times to such great degree. I mean, so when he came into to Ford, the year he came in 2006, they were scheduled to lose $17 billion with a B. And they did. When he left in 2014, it wasn't the year he left, but the next year, they became the number one car maker in the world again for the first time in 70-something years when GM overtook them in the, whatever it was, the 20s or 30s. That's pretty amazing. I don't know. Yeah. Steve Jobs never did that. Steve Jobs did a great job with Apple, right? Elon Musk is a great leader. You know, all these people, at least in the technology space, no leader that I've ever seen has done that twice. And he's done the same thing over 30 or 40 years. There was no change in it. So unfortunately, what I think happens is there's a huge gap between what science knows about leadership, quote unquote, and what business does about leadership. And you know, that's, you know, why I do podcasts and why I wrote a book is I want to share, hey, this is what works. And it works consistently. It's worked for thousands of years. There's a business in Kyoto, Japan, right outside of Kyoto, Japan, that's been making mochi for 1,000 years. They do the same thing and they do it really well. It's amazing when you look at great leaders that turn businesses around or grew businesses, you know, like Mulally or Bob Chapman, Barry Weinmuller, you know, Herb Kelleher at Southwest, you know, Lou Gerstner when he came and fixed IBM. They all do the same exact things. And they do them really, really well. To me, that's leadership. So I don't think it's changing. We just have to do more of it.
Yeah, like you said in the beginning that if we were to define leadership, it's about growing kind of a following of people who see your vision and admire your courage. And I suppose people haven't changed in many, many years, you know. So leadership must stay the same. In parallel, I suppose.
Yeah, agreed. And you said something really interesting there. So I'm also a neuroscience geek. And the last time our brains actually changed in any meaningful way was somewhere between 10 and 50,000 years ago. So no, people don't change that much. Our brains are basically the same and haven't changed. And actually, they're actually not suited for what we're doing. They're suited to be on the savanna and surviving in small groups, you know, gathering food and warmth, etc. And now we're having to do all these interesting things and it fools us on a regular basis. Our brain is tricking us on a daily basis.
Right.
Up to 99% of all of our decisions are made automatically without our conscious awareness. Yet we justify them after the fact. And that's just the way our brain works. So, you know, our brains have to catch up and it's going to take a while, probably take another thousands and thousands of years to catch up unless we change them, you know, through synthetics and stuff.
Yeah. Perhaps that's one thing that if you're in a position of leadership, you should be learning is actually how do people work and how they think, essentially.
Yeah. So I say, if you're not studying at least the basics of neuroscience, then you're not as good a leader as you can be because people are crazy. We're all irrational, impulsive, highly emotional beings. And if you don't understand that's how the brain works in terms of how it learns, how it protects itself, how it views threat and reward as its main calculus. It's basically our brain is a prediction engine. And so sometimes it predicts badly because it either doesn't have enough information or the situation that it's in has poor information. So it makes the wrong choice. And the only way it learns is hopefully it doesn't die. You know, then it comes back and it's like, oh, that didn't work, and try something else. And that's how the brain gets better at things. So one of the things I say to leaders, if you want to be a better leader, then expose yourself to all the situations that your teams will face. You know, get in there in the trenches with them as much as possible. Get out in the field, talk to customers, get and talk to your team. It'll give you a greater set of things to draw from when you need them. Don't sit in your ivory tower.
So, Bill, where can people get in touch with you if they really do need help, if they're stuck and want to grow further?
Sure. So the best place for me is my website. Everything's on there. My book is on there. It's either free or you can get it from Amazon or Audible. My contact info is on there. All the stuff I've ever written is on there. I've had 120, 130 blog posts that have been with us 4 or 5 years. So that's a place to get me. And that is www.catalystgrowthadvisors.com.
Perfect. And your book is really outstanding. I loved it myself. And
oh, it's thank just, you very it's, much. That's cool.
Every chapter is valuable. So thank you so much. Thank you for your time. And there's really a lot of food for thought that I think you left for the audience. So again, thanks for coming on the podcast. Appreciate it.
I appreciate being asked. It's great to have an opportunity to share a little bit. Hopefully help some folks.